Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAR Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday in association with Paddy Power. Stevie and Conan are here in studio with me. There's only one place to start, lads, because Donegal County Board are meeting Croke Park today. GAA delegates from Croke Park, I think it's including Tom Ryan, who obviously went to ground during the whole Kildare saga, but apparently did a lot of work in the background. So maybe he's just a secret operator that he doesn't like any kind of publicity. But right, so my take on this. So the Donegal County Board released a statement and they want to clarify how any county may use a ground as both neutral and home venue. So obviously Donegal have a case here. Donegal players and management have a case here. The Donegal County Board have a much weaker case going up to Croke Park, considering that two of their delegates enthusiastically agreed with the Super 8 format, which included provincial finalists playing in Croke Park in the first game of the Super 8s. So Croke Park are just going to laugh these lads back out of GAA headquarters. There's no doubt about that. Like, whether the issue here, the wrong people are fighting this battle, right? Because these delegates voted it in, their colleagues, and now they're going down to question it when it actually directly affects their own county. I see an awful lot of self interests here, in that there was nothing about this, and I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I am the only one to question this from the word go. I interviewed Duffy when he the Super 8s came through, and I pulled him up on this. I says, are Dublin going to get two Super 8 games? And he pretty much admitted that they were, and he pretty much admitted that it was an advantage to Dublin in doing so. Like, I mean, we played the audio recently, I'm not going to play it again.
It wasn't pretty much, he did, he said it does give them an advantage. I'm glad you blew your own trumpet, because I didn't want to blow it for you, but I was looking at it this morning and I couldn't find anybody else to question this. You did in 2016, before Congress in 2017, and then at Congress only Cork and Dermot Early, the GPA, raised any sort of opposition to it. Nobody mentioned Dublin's two games.
No,
Cork were talking about player welfare in three games in 15 days. Dermot Early was just saying we've been mandated by the players, but that got shut down very quickly by Jarlath Burns. Everybody else just came out and talked about what a great thing this is.
Yeah.
Niall Erskine from Donegal was the one who introduced it, and emotionally he was on the stage with the rest of them sitting beside Egan O'Farrell, and he said, this is a great thing, let's do it.
Yeah. So now you have like, it's shocking when you hear that. So like, my argument always is that Congress delegates don't care less about the playing side of it. They were all promised given a promise that obviously the money that these are going to generate, and we know the GA money goes back into the association, so they're seeing euro signs here. They're not thinking about their own county. But then you've like Kieran Cunningham, you've Jim McGuinness, and you've the Donegal kind of media contingent all forcing this now. Where were they when this was decided, when it was nothing to do with Donegal? Like, do we want what's a fair championship, or do we want just what's like the interests our own county? Like, I mean, it really bothers me that nobody got on this, and we played that audio 3 months ago, Conan, and nobody said a dicky bird. And like, it was obvious Dublin had two home games.
Yeah, listen, I'm probably on the fence a wee bit on this. I think it's an incentive for any team that wins their provincial championship to go to Croke Park, and Dublin have done that fairly and squarely, you know. So the bonus for them is obviously an extra game at Croke Park. I was listening to an interview yesterday with Michael Murphy as well from Donegal, and from a player's point of view, I thought he was, you know, genuine about the whole thing. He said, listen, they're taking it at the minute that the game is going to be in Croke Park, and that's it. Yeah. And that's fair enough.
It will be in Croke Park.
Yeah, but it's going to be in Croke Park.
The thing, Michael Murphy is a little bit in a weird situation there. He might think this is unfair, but he can't psychologically as a player come out and say this is not right, or else you're showing a weakness. And no team is ever going to say we can't beat them there. None of the top teams would say that.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough, but at the same time, you know, Donegal in the last 4 or 5 years have gone to headquarters and beat Dublin, so they have actually embarrassed Dublin in headquarters. So if there's any team out there that can go and get a result, you know, I would say Donegal are best suited to do so.
In 2014, but like, I mean, I don't know, Dublin have not been beaten since then in Croke Park. They
I understand that, and listen, they are the monopoly and they have the best squad out there, but you know, it's not Dublin's fault that they're getting to play two games at Croke Park.
Absolutely not Dublin's fault, but we don't even need to say that. Like, I mean, that anyone with any intelligence knows this is not Dublin's fault. This is a GAA decision, which is designed to make money for Dublin. Like, there's no doubt about this. But, like, I mean, Declan Bonner says not going into Dublin's backyard to play what is so-called a neutral match. So the issue here is that it's set in stone in a rule that this is a neutral match and this is in Croke Park. Dublin will have nominated Croke Park as their home venue, so the third one. So there's no real getting around this unless a motion is brought to Congress next year to try and fix this. The only other solution for this is if we see some player power, because we saw the effect the GPA's statement had last Monday, and Seamus Hickey was on the show last Thursday saying that they will act if players come to their, or bring it to their attention. Here's that audio now.
So this is something that I suppose that has been going on for a number of years, and it's something that both the Leinster Council and the GAA have, I suppose, backed consistently for the last number of years. I suppose, you know, in terms of players, we've had no direct objections or let's say complaints to us from players, but I suppose the instance last year where Dublin came down to Nolan Park to play championship football was, I suppose, seen as progress. But you know, in terms of that wider issue, as a playing body, we represent the views of the players, and unless we actually have a group who are adversely affected one way or the other, it is a situation that Leinster and the Leinster Council and the GAA have been driving in the last few years.
Yeah, so that's fairly clear there, that if the Donegal players were to go to the GPA pretty much as the union are forced into acting on their behalf. So whether Donegal players need that distraction in this middle of the championship is, you know, up for debate. But I will pull you up on one thing, Stevie. If, like, Clonus is the Ulster venue is the Ulster kind of championship venue.
Monaghan,
and it's in Monaghan. So Monaghan obviously are in luck, like Tipperary are with Semple Stadium, and like Dublin are with Croke Park, that the provincial ground is in their county ground. Well, Dublin obviously Parnell Park, but they play all their league games in Croke Park. So as far as I'm concerned, Croke Park is a Dublin home venue. Would you think it would be fair if Monaghan drew Armagh in the Super 8s and Monaghan played their neutral game in Clonus, they played their home game in Clonus against they played their home game in Clonus, then they played their away game somewhere else, and then played Armagh in Clonus in the neutral game?
Personally, I'd have no problem with it, because quite often we went and played Monaghan in Clonus and beat them there, you know, during my playing career. So I would have no problem with that whatsoever. I can see the argument to and for, you know, to and against, the Dublin situation. The Kildare and Mayo match was totally different circumstances. So it was, you know, it was, for me,
well, they were both Croke Park putting a match in a bigger venue to create more revenue and not taking what's fair into consideration.
But at different stages of the championship.
Yeah, just one round in the difference, you know.
One round, but, you know, it wasn't passed the Congress, and that's why I think ultimately it was overturned.
But we know this is passed in Congress, but what the conversation I'm having here is that fair? That's my issue.
Yeah, it's not fair. It definitely
isn't. It's not fair. You'd want to be crazy to argue that it's fair.
Yeah, and it should definitely change next year, but I don't think Donegal is their appeal or the GPA getting involved will do anything, because it's in the rules. Like, it's what everyone voted for, and the difference between Newbridge was that it was in the rules that game could be at home for Kildare. But it's definitely something that does need to change for next year, because it is two home games for Dublin, whatever way you paint it, and it's not going to wash sort of going forward. So if they want the Super 8s to go down well with everybody, then it has to change next year.
Yeah.
But it won't change this year.
No, it won't change this year. And Seamus Hickey did say that this two match venue is one of these two Croke Park advantages, something that will be up for review at the end of the year when they sit down with the GAA and a couple of other things. I think that's the way this is going to play out. Nothing's going to happen this year. They're going to be played in Croke Park. I'm delighted that a lot of things I've been campaigning for a long time, a light has been shone on it now. So Dublin playing, like, I think I was reading a stat there that some of the Dublin players have only ever played three games outside of Croke Park championship games. So they've only played three over the last 12 years. So say pretty much every single one of them have only ever played three outside. Since 2010, they've been playing home league games. There's their home ground. Like, there's no question about this. But then, of course, you have all the gobshites trying to tell you that this is anti-Dublin. And I honestly can't see how anyone could argue that. If this was Monaghan and Clonus, I would be equally saying they shouldn't have both their home and neutral game in Clonus, or if it was Tipperary and Semple Stadium. It's just not right. It's not fair. And like, the people are trying to point, oh, nobody complained when Kerry were winning handy All-Irelands, but we did, and now the championship structure has changed. Like, we only talked in the podcast last week how easy Roscommon have to get into the Super A's. It's wrong. We want rid of the provincials. Yeah. That's what everyone's trying to fix all these unfair issues within the GAA. It doesn't always. Sometimes it involves Dublin. Sometimes it's nothing to do with Dublin. Dublin usually came through. Obviously, Leinster isn't that strong now, but they're in a big province where they have to play four games to win it. Kerry have to play two. Someone in Connacht might only have to play two. Like, Roscommon have beaten Leitrim and win one more game and they're in the last 12. That's wrong. But Roscommon wouldn't turn around and say this is anti-Roscommon. Like, I mean, this Dublin support you get, and they're just sickening. They're absolutely sickening. It's sick.
That Leinster final defeat really took its toll on you.
These are the fans. Like, I've no interest. I've no problem with Dublin. Like, we eulogise about Dublin here. Absolutely. Dublin are a fantastic team. And again, you always have to say, well, the players won't mind moving outside. We know they wouldn't. This is a GAA issue. Yeah. And they're using Dublin as the cash cow. And Dublin, through no fault of their own, have a huge fan base. So they're trying to milk as much money out of them as possible at the expense of a fair competition.
Yeah.
How can anybody argue against that?
In fairness, like, everyone's so militant. I remember someone from the Roscommon County Board giving off to me last year, because I wrote a piece saying, look how easy their run was, and this is last year compared to Monaghan or something like that, so they weren't happy back then. But if I was from Dublin, I would want these changes to be implemented, because Dublin still would have won three All-Irelands in a row there.
Yeah,
that wouldn't have changed if they were outside Croke Park. If the Super 8s were involved, they would have still won. They had the best teams.
Yeah.
They would have won away or neutral, whatever it was. So if I was from Dublin, I'd say go ahead, do it, stop your whinging, and we'll win whatever way you want.
All of this is going to have the knock-on effect, and it's actually made Dublin's position in Croke Park even stronger, because this has shone a light on it being their home ground, right? So, like, I mean, I'm sure Dublin amongst themselves could be kind of quite happy the way this is all playing out, that a lot of counties are complaining about playing them in Croke Park. What does that mean for an All-Ireland final or an All-Ireland semi-final? Yeah. Dublin would be like, lads, everyone's up in arms about this. Like, let's play on this, like, psychologically.
Absolutely,
ourselves.
Yeah. And they're afraid to come here.
They're afraid to come here. And, like, Kerry and Mayo, like, I mean, they would never admit that they're afraid to come in here, because they're not. Like, I remember I was talking to someone from Mayo recently about the Mayo Kildare thing, and his line to me was that Leinster counties are pathetic the way they complain about Dublin and Croke Park. If Mayo went down that road, who would challenge Dublin?
Yeah.
Psychologically. Yeah. It's wrong, and players can never, ever, ever admit that this is wrong. And this is why it's really hard for them to get on board here, because even when I was playing Dublin, well, we had a good team, but I remember I was saying recently on the podcast, we played with Emlyn Mulligan, we played Kildare in 98. Like, any rational thinker wouldn't think we had a chance. They had a great team. I thought we were going to win that game. Do you know what I mean? Players have to believe they'll win.
Absolutely, yeah.
So without players admitting, they can't admit that it's unfair. So without players getting involved and protesting, then we're stuck with county board gobshites who voted it in. So, like, I mean, look, we'll leave that one there at that, because, like, it could be going around circles. Nothing's going to change. We'd be amazed here on this show.
Nothing's going to change this year. No,
but I think it will next year's Congress. I think some county will bring it forward. But then again, when a county doesn't have the obvious example of their county being involved, will they give a shit? Like, money... or the off chance that you get to Super 8s and qualify to meet Dublin, or money. Do you know what I mean? Would you even be confident that it would get through? Like, you wouldn't even be sure. I honestly wouldn't be sure. Anyways, Tyrone's qualifier win rate, lads, is incredible. They have an 87% win rate in the qualifiers. So it leaves them in the backdoor series. So it leaves them in third position behind Dublin, who've only lost one qualifier ever. And
who's that against?
Dublin qualifier against. Who is it? Armagh, was it that year? Yeah.
Well, I hope so, in 2003.
It was, yeah. Tony McEntee was great, or John McEntee was great that day, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Kicking big long. Remember that in Croke Park. Was that a qualifier? Must have been a very late qualifier then.
It was the day Cluxton got sent off.
Oh, was that?
That was a qualifier, yeah.
Was that a qualifier? Yeah. All right.
Monaghan beat us in the first round that year, so that, it's got to be the only one time that they've been beat then.
Right, that's interesting. That's the only qualifier they've lost, but in fairness, they've won feckin' 13 of the last 14 Leinster, so they've not really often in the qualifiers. They're not really often in the qualifiers. So that was it. So Kerry and Dublin. Kerry are the other... Kerry have a 100% record, but again, they've such a great record in Munster. This not comparing like with like. Kerry and Dublin have only played 21 qualifier games combined compared to Tyrone's 31. Tyrone have 31 qualifier games played and an 87% win. Like, this is for a big glamour, a big team that has eyes on Ulster. For them to be able to refocus psychologically and hit those qualifiers, like, I mean, that's a seriously impressive stat.
Yeah, they have almost been caught out in the hop a few times, but, you know, that's an impressive record.
One was against Kerry down Killarney, I remember that.
Yeah, they were.
Was Kieran Donaghy's first?
Meath also beat them a few years ago as well. Leash beat them as well.
Leash beat them in 06,
Yeah, so.
They were decimated there. Yeah,
any game, I don't think they've maybe been beat in Oma, if my memory serves me correctly, but you know, they have a very impressive record. Listen, it's no surprise that over the last 15 years to have been one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, when you have the calibre of players that Tyrone have had, the likes of Ram McManaman, Sean Kavanagh, Mulligan, boys you got there, they're always going to be a force to be reckoned with.
But they're able to regroup. That's
they
impressive,
are able to
isn't
regroup,
it?
But good players can regroup. You know, they can get over, I suppose, a defeat faster than what the general player will. And Mickey Hart is obviously a great motivator as well to get his team prepared.
I think that he deserves the credit there.
Absolutely. He deserves massive credit. He went through the back door twice to win the All-Ireland as well. So, you know, he deserves massive credit in terms of regrouping his team and getting them ready for the long road in terms of the qualifiers. And, you know, 87% is a phenomenal record when you think about it. The spans over 15
since
years.
More, 18, more, since 18, 2000.
Is it? Yeah. 18 years, yeah.
Yeah, and it shines more light on the criticism that Mickey Hart's gotten in the last few years. Like, we talked last week about how Tyrone don't lose the teams that they shouldn't lose to, and the teams that they've lost to are Mayo, Kerry and Dublin, and then Monaghan this year. And, like, you know, this is just unbelievable consistency over the last number of years. And then, you know, for people, they think that it's not good enough what they've done over the last 3 years, especially. It's like, well, like they're on the brink of getting to the very, very top.
Sorry, I actually said that they haven't been beaten. Armagh beat them in Oman in 2013.
Here we go.
14. But that's right.
Oh, they did. McGeaney's early years, was it?
Yeah. Paul Grimley.
Yeah.
So, 2013, I think
it
was.
Big fight in that one, wasn't there? Kieran McKeever was off to no good there.
At all. What are you on about? You love bringing up a good fight.
Eamon Burns has quit as down manager, Stevie. So we're asking you now, are you throwing your name into the hat here?
Certainly not.
Well into the down club scene.
No, surely it's going to be Stevie Poacher's job now. Definitely, you know, he's the name that's...
God, they don't want that,
you know,
do they?
It's the name that's being tipped there, and even when Eamon Burns was still in the job, you know, you heard his name being thrown around. So,
but down football don't need Poacher, do they? Down's history is too... It's too...
Exciting.
Yeah, it's too... Down are a team that don't... They're the anti-Stephen Poacher, really.
Well, you know, they've played a brand of football down through the years that, you know, has suited them, but over the last number of years they haven't been successful. So does a change in that style, you know, need to be implemented? And does a change in the style of manager need to be implemented as well?
They did all right. I wouldn't say last year. They did all right last year.
They done
last year, Armagh, Monaghan to get to a final, and now they didn't. Tyrone beat them. Yeah. Or not last year, the year before.
It was last year. They got beat by Tyrone in the final, all right, and then Monaghan beat them in the qualifiers.
Again,
but, you know, ultimately, you know, I think they caught Monaghan in particular by the hop last year. So, you know, Monaghan obviously got their opportunity to redeem themselves when they played each other in Croke Park, and they had done that, of course. But Down is a strange one. They have some quality players, but I look from the outside and I look at some of the players that they have, and they're not really county material as well. And
really? Do they have everyone committing?
They don't have everyone committing, especially not this year. They had last year more so than what they have this year. So, you know, and maybe that's why they went on an extended run last year. But this year, you know, there has been a number of players that have opted out of the panel for one reason or another, to go travelling or whatever it may be. And, you know, it's always a bad sign. And we have it in Armagh as well, that there is players that have gone travelling, Jamie Clark being the most obvious one. But, you know, you want your best players being available for inter-county season. You know, probably 10-15 years ago, you wouldn't have heard of the volume of players that opt out of county squads the way we do nowadays. And, you know, there is other opportunities for people in life. But, you know, ultimately, if you want to make it as a footballer, you've got to make yourself available for the county team. And it hasn't happened for them this year.
Back then, it wasn't as big of a commitment on your life, you know. So, like, I mean, that's definitely had an effect. Like, sometimes you need a year to breathe and get out of that bloody thing.
Exactly,
And do a bit of travelling or whatever these young lads want to do. Because speaking of travelling, Dermot O'Connor and Conor Loftus, they had a fairly hectic schedule after losing to Kildare the other night. So they ended up in Chicago. So it was a 12-hour scramble. So McBride's in Chicago. I'd never heard of McBride's. They weren't there when I was there. Would you remember McBride's?
I think they were junior when we were there,
Right. Well, I wasn't playing junior. I was.
They're certainly senior now.
I was at the senior, Stevie. Did you get big money junior, did you?
No, I didn't play junior. I didn't say that. I was a Brendan's man. I think you were as well, were you?
Brendan's, yeah. Brendan's all the way.
There you go.
Never asked
senior,
me back.
Senior then.
I was a sub deer, is that what you believe?
There you go. It doesn't surprise me. I wasn't.
What was your man's name from Derry that was out there at the time? A crossing lad, a wing back.
Basically,
I was always tell this story. I got skint in my first game by Gary Mason from Down, and I didn't know who he was, and I suggested I go over and mark this out, lad, and I thought I was in
quality,
quality kick me for four,
and great free taker as well.
Yeah, but I wasn't worried about his freeze. I was worried about the skinning he gave me for play. But anyway,
13 aside football, I tell you, is wee bit easier.
It was me, Seamus Quinn. Do you remember him from Leitrim? Big monster. Now he wasn't great out there because the heat suited him, but he was an all star, so he was a guaranteed starter. And then Michael Donlan came out, and back then you could only play three out of towners.
That's right.
So they were concerned about how shit a marker I was, right? So they got this crossing lad from Derry. So this lad was starting ahead of me. Like, it's outrageous. Like, he's all right, but
he played All Ireland semi finals.
Did he play All Ireland semi finals? Well, you see, look, they needed a marker.
He played at a higher level than you, Wooly.
Top yours, buddy. He did in his arse play.
I was wondering why.
Why this lad carried Mark? Like, I hated him out there. I didn't like this fella at all because he was on the team ahead of me.
I was wondering why he came over to me in the office the other day, and it was like, geez, you see the bench there for that Brendan's team? Oh, McHugh's on it. It's a very, very strong bench over there.
Well, to be honest with you, I'd left Laois that year, and I was a little bit pissed off anyway. The football inside of it didn't bother me as much. It was, will I get paid if I'm not on the team? That's all I was worried about.
Don't have you didn't sort that out before you even went over.
No, I know. I only got paid at the end every year. I just had to based on trust, and I was never let down. But if you're not on the team and you're only 20 years of age, you're going to be you're going to be looking across and going, hurt, get injured, you.
He didn't have the same leverage as you, Stevie.
No.
So anyways, Dermot O'Connor and Conor Loftus, the closing date was 12 o'clock on the Sunday, wasn't it? Is that right? On July the 1st.
Yeah.
So they actually had to get a flight the next morning straight away. So number
is
one,
right?
There's no way these two fellas would have had set up America. I did that one year with Laois. It's wrong to do it because you don't need to be in, and definitely Mayo lads wouldn't be in that headspace. So by the time that final whistle blew at about 9 o'clock on Saturday night, you had American clubs ringing them or through connections. You had flight booked at set or whatever, nine o'clock the American flights go out usually or whatever, something like that. And they're heading over to Chicago, and they're landing in Chicago, and they're rushing to the, there's one last meeting where all the signatures go on, you know, those ones where everyone's looking around to see who has who out, and it's great.
And when was it they had to be over there? From Monday, was it?
I think it was Sunday night. It must have been the deadline.
Deadline day,
So they had to go back to Mayo to come back to Dublin, more than likely, as well.
Oh yeah.
This is after
Dermot O'Connor crawling off the field.
Yeah. It's very opportunistic from the Chicago outfit.
They thought on their feet. They obviously had a direct line to somebody.
Well, I remember a few years ago, my Armagh played Laois in the game that was replayed again. I had a contact from Chicago calling me straight after both of them games, any of them Armagh lads available. Literally, I was coming up the road from the Laois game, any of them Armagh lads available to get them out as fast as possible. There was a deadline obviously to meet back then as well, so to be on the ball, they're mad keen to get one over the other over there. And
remember Gary Walsh sent that stupid tweet there before the Laois final, so I had a lad in my mate over in Donegal, Boston, ringing me. Here, send me or text me. Send me Gary Walsh's number. I said, I will not. I will not send you his number. Oh, is he not gone? No, he's not gone. He's staying around. Says, well, if he's gone, let me know now. Oh, they're on the ball over there. They're on the ball.
Time.
They know exactly.
And then they'll go on appeal against something stupid. you know, to get the other team sent out of the competition, yeah, thrown out of the competition.
Yeah,
ultimately,
we actually,
you know,
spoke about that recently here on the show. Right, okay, another quick, two quick ones before we go. Declan Bonner, lads, we mentioned him already. He played in, and this applies to you, Stevie, who's just, you've just moved back into the goals yourself. So yeah, you could have a bit
I've
of a stint
a
in the goals.
Of him in goals,
52
right.
years yeah. of age, and he bailed his club out in Arosa.
Wouldn't be far off you, Stevie, would it?
In a league
yeah,
game.
Just 14 years, my senior.
So he stays heavily involved with Narossa. He's the yeah. club chairman. And like, I love this now. So he's not only the county manager, he's the club chairman, and he's lining out in goals. Like, that's proper GA man, Conor. Like, you write one of those lovely kind of heartfelt pieces about yeah. Declan Bonner now.
That's what it's all about.
It is what it's all about. But like, I mean, I suppose, let's be honest about it, you can play in goals till you're bloody 60, yeah.
Well,
can't you?
Well, you can, but
just
I'll tell you what,
the corner back.
With forwards burned down and you, when some of the shots, you know, you don't want to be standing in the way too often. But I seen an image of Declan Bonner striking a ball out off
Me
the ground.
Too.
Left footer. He was always a beautiful free taker back in the day anyway. I'd yeah. say his kickouts are top notch, still even at this time.
Yeah, no, exactly. And go on, Conor.
It seems to happen a lot in Donegal where like these older lads coming and bailing out their teams. I remember Eamon Gorrell's 55-year-old played in goals as well for his.
Yeah.
For his
sure, look, I'm
masters.
Bailing out my own team here in the league at senior level, getting 10 minutes.
Are you at senior level?
I played two matches at senior level. I came on for 10 minutes and 7 minutes.
You never blew your trumpet there at all in that
no,
one.
I didn't really. I didn't.
I haven't made the grade at senior level yet. I'm still sticking
are you,
with the juniors.
You're in the gym 25 days of the last 30, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
You've got notions about these seniors.
No, I have
yes,
absolutely
do.
Do not. I'm just getting fit. I'm enjoying playing football in a relaxed state of mind. I love playing goals, by the way, simply because I love that you can ping kickouts left or right, and I hate when a player's coming one on one with me though.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But, yeah, but we always said that you're not, if you save that, it's a bonus, and if you let it in, sure, look, it's a good finish. Like, yeah. I mean, you're in a no lose situation as a goalkeeper yeah. in that yeah. scenario. Finally, before we go on and move on to the four games, it's official that Armagh are in the last round of the qualifiers. And what do Armagh have? What do Armagh always have? A siege mentality. They've got their siege mentality. So we had Kieran McGeaney talking about the abuse they got after the Fermanagh yeah. match last Monday. We were talking about that. So Jamar Hall, he's wing forward on the
yeah,
team now,
good
new
player,
fella,
good player, yeah.
right? So he's talking about this. So he's talking about the abuse after Fermanagh match. It's still fueling us up every game.
Yeah.
All the abuse we got after Fermanagh. People said we didn't want to play for the team, that we didn't want to play for the jersey, and that's fueling us every game. Kieran reminded us before we went out to have that wee bit of extra hunger and show that we actually are good enough to play for Armagh. Siege mentality intact.
Hang on. Every team has a siege mentality. Every
Armagh.
Single team.
Do Armagh psychologically need a siege mentality?
No.
They do?
No, absolutely not.
You always have
no,
one.
Absolutely not. But I think where the players and where the management team is coming from is probably right. After the Fermanagh defeat, you know, yes, it was a disgraceful performance, and rightly so. They got, you know, lambasted through the media and on social media as well. But they have used that to their advantage, and it, yes, you may call it a siege mentality, but other teams used examples like that as well to get their seasons back on track. Since then, you know, and thinking about how Armagh have gone this year, you know, they played good attacking football throughout the course of the National League, ended up winning the league and coming up in the Division 2. They had one brutal performance against Fermanagh, absolutely brutal
yeah.
performance,
and
but
McGeaney
since then they've got
yeah.
back on the road again and put up impressive scores again. So, you know, was the Fermanagh game a total shock in terms of, you know, they were hit by Fermanagh? We knew how they were going
to
set up, and
there was a sending off in that too that McGeaney
there was a sending off I think it was just after half time, so it was Niall Grimley
yeah.
For an elbow, and rightly so, he deserved to get sent off. That probably did play a major role in that particular game, but Armagh have got back on the wagon since then and have put in impressive performances. And don't underestimate how, you know, the victory over Clare last week, you know, was how big the victory over Clare last week was, because that Clare team are decent. They've
yeah,
got some
yeah.
very, very good footballers. And sometimes you can say, well, you're playing at home, you're playing against Clare. You know, playing at home, all right, but Clare had Armagh under the cosh, but the Armagh players kept, you know, going and going and never give up. They're 4 points down with 2 minutes of normal time left, and
yeah.
to be able to turn it around in such a short space of time, shows that, you know,
see how tell he's working.
No, shove it down her throat.
It shows that they have players capable of putting up scores in such a short space of time.
They do, yeah, there's no doubt about that. Another bit just at the end from Jamar is, people say this team isn't good enough and we don't have the players, but we showed that bit of fight and we're able to stand up to it when it was put to us. So who's saying that the team isn't good enough and they don't have the players? Is this local media? Because a lot of criticism often that people, that players complain about, is the local media. It can be a lot more vicious sometimes than national.
I think local media, the social media, I think the biggest problem, and the players do read it, is the message boards. You know, they're often lambasted by people who are hiding behind, you know, usernames, whatever.
That's their own county.
And they are lambasting players throughout the length and breadth of this country, you know, not only in Armagh. And I think it's unwarranted, but players do read these comments, so they do, and they do use it as motivation. I remember, you know, using certain things wrote about me as motivation just to go out and prove a point as well. So, you know, you have to look for any type of motivation that you can get.
Siege mentality.
You might call it that, whatever, but I'm telling you now, every single team uses it. How often do you hear of a story of a team going into the dressing room and seeing quotes, you know, pinned around the wall of a dressing room because of what their opponent said?
I've never seen that in my whole career. Never once,
that's very surprising, because it is used quite often. So yeah, it is with many teams. Maybe it's only a northern thing, but I don't think that it is.
Dublin had
something in their dressing room a few years ago, had they not, pinned on the wall?
They're nice motivational quotes.
Oh, they have these, yeah. People. These are a bit fancy now for my liking. If one of these quotes gets you riled up, I don't know. It's just a different mentality. But these are like, these people must go searching online for inspirational quotes or quotes that make you think. And like, I mean, I'm so against all that nonsense. I really am. I'm against it. What was the one, Conan? Because you did a piece on it with Dublin, wasn't it?
Darwin about the group. How the group comes together.
Snore off.
Some of the individual or something.
Snore off.
But it can be nice to read. But I think this is sports psychology gone mad. What that is. Like, but if you don't do it, you think you're missing out on what other. It has no tangible effect on what happens out in the field. But the effect I think it has is that, lads, you've got everything you want. Like, there's no, this is a professional setup. Mm. You've got all your sports psychologists. I don't think that shit works at all. But like, I mean, if, psychologically, how it might work is that, lads, you have everything you want.
It does work with some players. It definitely works with some players. It doesn't work with others. And, you know, the idea of it, I suppose, spread across a dressing room is that, you know, if it impacts five or six players and we get a better performance out of them, then that's brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll be back and we'll have a look at all these games in Paddy Power predictions. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want no
1 minute man. All right, we'll go through these games in the order that they're being played this weekend. So the first one up is Armagh and Roscommon in Amour Park at 3 o'clock. Now, these are obviously Paddy Power predictions, and we'll also stop and chat about all four games, because all four games, usually we do a part two on the big game of the weekend, but as far as I'm concerned, all these four games have an equal standing, really, you know. Arguably, Armagh Roscommon is going to be the game of the weekend. Like, I mean, these are two teams like Kildare and Meath that set up similarly, are more of an attack-minded team, play that modern game that we all like, leaving three or four forwards up but dropping a few bodies back behind the ball. But you will get one-on-ones at the other end against both these teams.
Yeah, you would expect that it'll be a free-flowing game of football. Yes, both teams will have to defend in numbers at times, but the majority of play, you know, both teams will leave players up and go to outscore each other. And it's going to be a good spectacle, I hope, from an Armagh point of view. I do believe that they've got bag on the wagon, as you said earlier on. They are playing the attractive style of football that suits these players, and I hope that they go into Saturday with a lot of belief and confidence based on the last couple of results, and really take the game to Roscommon.
Tell us about Rory Grugan there, because he's the one, the eye-catching player. And is he playing, like, there's so much more to his game than just being an orthodox corner forward. He's not playing an orthodox corner forward.
Rory actually is probably the main link player. I don't want to say too much about him. He is a fantastic player. He's a probably.
You used not want to say too much in case Kevin McStay is listening.
He's a secret rapping in secret rapping and such.
You're being paid good money here now to tell us about Rory Grugan.
Rory Grugan, listen, we all know about him now. You know, over the last couple of years, he's become one of the most influential players in the Armagh setup. He played number 11 for Armagh Minors when they won All Ireland. Yeah. So that tells you that he's a playmaker as well, and playing corner forward and allowing them to drift out the field slightly to get on the ball and link play up.
So he plays the top of the D, maybe.
Clark last year, is it?
Yeah, he would play more of a role between the top of the D and the half forward line as well. So he's a link player.
Yeah.
And what he does very effectively, his movement is really good. He's a smart player, so he is. He knows when to move, where to move to. Very, very rarely does he get on the ball and give it away. And that's the key to a good smart player in that position. But what he does is he has a finishing touch as well. And maybe playing him in the 13 role, from Kieran McGeaney's point of view, tells Roy, we want you scoring as well. Not just playing at 11 role and playmaking, we want you scoring as well. But he takes that responsibility on board. He is the team captain as well. And, you know, I remember coming to the end of my playing career and Rory Grugan was just in and on involved in the squad. And he was a very late player, so he was back then. But he hasn't bulked up massively, but he's got a lot stronger, so he has. But he's definitely, over the last couple of years, you know, grown in stature in terms of been given the responsibility, and he's you know, taken that on board and grown as a player as well.
So who's left inside with Mernan then? So you'll have Grugan on the top of the D making those breaks. Was it Rafferty, but he's not around. Who stays inside with Mernan?
There's different players taking turns. Niall Grimley is another player similar to Rory Grugan, but he finds himself inside sometimes. Jamar Hall started last week. He's another player, you know, named in the half forward line last week, but probably more accustomed to playing in the corner forward position as well, and a lively player as well. So, you know, Armagh have a number of players that can play in and out. Aidan Forker, you know, he sometimes finds himself playing half back line, but he can also find himself playing in the corner forward position as well. That's the beauty about Armagh. We don't want to get too hyper about them, but to have a lot of players that can play in multiple positions, and that's very, very important at that level of football.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, there's so much chopping and changing. If you're not from Armagh, it's very hard to keep track of that Armagh team. There's always something different.
It is, yeah. I suppose, you know, from a defensive point of view, they are more stable and in terms of, you know, we know what six or seven players is going to be playing in those positions from one week to another. But attack wise, you know, that there is a lot of options there. You know, Jamar Hall came out and said that we have players that are capable of scoring, and they certainly do have players that are capable of scoring. Ram McShane is another player, you know, an absolute live wire. Ideally suited to playing wing half forward, brilliant on their breaking ball, but you can put him in corner forward as well, because he's got that blistering pace that can take a man on and get a score as well. So, you know, there is chopping and changing, but I suppose Kieran looks at the players, looks at the opponents as well, and tries to find ways of maybe getting in underneath the skin of the opponents and by his team selection. And I would say that's what he thinks about quite a lot. You know, quite often you'll also see Mark Shields, who's an out and out defender, playing in the half forward line.
Yeah. But he usually does a man marking job, doesn't he? I think he was on Jamie Malone
he would do a man marking job, but he's a player capable of getting one or two points as well from the half forward line.
Yeah, I remember he went into half forward to mark Robbie Kiley against Tipperary.
And Caelan Mooney.
But he ended up scoring two or three himself, you know, because he was just
pulling him. He's a brilliant player at breaking forward as well.
Yeah, so he got a goal off Caelan Mooney, but Caelan Mooney got a few points as well.
Yeah,
against Down.
He did. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's interesting. And like, I mean, we know Roscommon are weak in midfield, but Charlie Vernon's back out there, who isn't the best fetcher in the world. Is Sheridan a good fetcher?
Because Sheridan's a big unit, and
that's a weakness for Roscommon that was highlighted. And look, it didn't need to be highlighted against Galway, because most people understand that.
I would actually go back as far to the Fermanagh game and say that Stephen Sheridan was a huge loss for our man that particular game. He was out injured. He's been very, very good, and he's been an important player for them throughout the course of last year's championship, this year's league campaign, and he was a big loss to them at the start of the championship this year. But he's back in there now. He is a fetcher. He's a very athletic player, so he is. He's a non-drinker. You know, he builds his life around playing football for Armagh as well. And you know, he's a player that gets up and down the field, works hard back, going backwards. But you know, he's one of these midfielders that can kick a couple of points as well. And he is a fetcher. He's maybe 6 foot 3 or 4, and he can get himself up and and catch good ball as well. And Charlie out there as well adds that bit of experience as well.
Yeah, a bit of strength. Isn't Stevie Gass no more than myself about Leash? He'd nearly convince you, Aramar, all Ireland contenders, the way you're going through. You're going
did
through
a lot last
no, but
year
you're asking me about them. I will tip Roscommon at the end of all of this.
Like with Blaine Huser and Nets, like you don't even need to be a good fetcher because wherever you go, he'll just put it on your chest.
Yeah.
He's a top five keeper, like sort of kickers anyway in the country.
Yeah. What's McGeaney's kick out policy then? Is it go short when it's on? Does he like to lump it down the middle?
Listen, Blaine, I would say, you know, he mixes. He definitely does mix it, so he does. But as Conan said there, Blaine Hughes is one of these players who can pinpoint a kick out, you know, 50, 60 yards, or he can give it short. So yeah, and he's a very fast player to get the ball out and set. So whichever is the best option at that particular time, he'll go with.
Yeah, so like I suppose the question here, I think Roscommon are slightly ahead of Armagh, but there won't be much in this game at all. Like, I mean, it depends how Roscommon have gotten over the Connacht title loss. Yeah. Like, I mean, that was a bad loss. McStay said after the game, so we know Kevin McStay is one of the best managers to ever listen to after a game because he is incredibly honest and it doesn't seem to, like, it doesn't affect anything about anything. But he said after the game, I say it doesn't affect anything about anything. What am I on about? He says, we had issues with our tackling, our tracking back, and the opposition's kick out in the last 15 minutes. People fell asleep and lost concentration. Our subs didn't work, and that falls back on those players and the management who made the changes. We've tidied things up a bit as best since then. So issues with tackling, tracking back, opposition's kick out and the subs. So yeah. Like, I mean, that's a lot to admit that went wrong on the day.
And we have often spoke about, you know, how good of a manager Kevin McStay is, and there's no doubt that he will have done his homework on, you know, what went wrong in the Connacht final. He'll also be doing his homework on his research on Armagh as well going into this game. And yes, over the last couple of years, Roscommon have been never improving side. They played at a higher level than what Armagh have played at, and you know, we have blown their trumpet in terms of, you know, winning Connacht last year, unluckily getting beaten in the Connacht final this year. You know, by all accounts, in the first half they should have been maybe further ahead, so they're unfortunate to miss out this year. But you know, they will be seeing this as a great opportunity for themselves to get back on track. But at the same time, Armagh's record over Roscommon in recent times has been impressive, and they won't fear them. So it's got, you know, the early ingredients for this game. It seems that it's going to be an exciting challenge. You know, Kevin McStay will definitely want Roscommon to really go at Armagh heavy and hard at the start, and it'll be interesting to see if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, it definitely will. So where are we going for here, lads? The Paddy Power betting is Armagh 7-4 outsiders, which is a great bet for Armagh as far as I'd be concerned. Roscommon 8-13. The handicap is -2.
Yeah. Go on ahead, I'll let you go, Conan.
Well, no, I thought it might be the other way around, where Armagh would go at Roscommon early, because as much as it's a strength for Roscommon that they're almost automatically in the last 12, they have only beaten Leitrim and then just lost a game.
Yeah.
So they're sort of cold coming into this, whereas Armagh have won 3 games in a row now, and I think Armagh will go at them very hard early on, and that's why I'm going to sort of bottle it a little bit, because I don't really know about Roscommon yet this year, so I'm going to say a draw 8-1.
Right, because they are on different trajectories. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. One, and Grugan was talking during the week about the momentum that they have after winning 3 games in a row and all 3 winnable games. They got a nice draw, Armagh, that they were tested.
Yeah.
But, you know, nobody that was going to knock them out, you know. And I do take that on board about Roscommon as well. Like, I mean, they've lost the one test that they had. Now, they were very competitive against a good Galway side too.
Yeah, I think, listen, it's very much up in the earth. I actually contemplated going for the draw myself earlier on, but I just think, you know, there might be a freshness about Roscommon coming into this game, and it might just leave them a wee bit sharper than what Armagh are at the minute. Playing a few weeks, one after another, you know, can be tough as well. And I would slightly favour Roscommon going into this game, but going back to my point that I made earlier on, Armagh have got a great record against Roscommon in recent times and certainly won't fear them, so wouldn't be surprised if the game sways either way, but I will just slightly tip Roscommon based on their last few years.
I'm going to slightly favour Roscommon as well. Armagh were well able to beat Kildare, who were in the very same situation as Roscommon last year, and everybody fancied Kildare to beat Armagh, and they still did it. Don't have Jamie Clark there, you know. Like, I mean, if Roscommon can shut down Grugan, you know, Murnan, while he's a really dangerous player, I don't know if he's going to be shooting the lights out too much. Yeah. I don't know if they have that firepower. Rafferty was a fairly big, heavy scorer. He's not around. Like, I mean, look, Grimley does chip in with scores. Like,
Grimley is the type of player that, you know, he can get you 1 point or he can get you 7 or 8 points, and it all depends on, you know, which Grimley turns up, you know. Okay. And he's a very important player for Armagh. If Niall Grimley turns up and is on fire, you know, you would have to give Armagh a stronger chance, of course, because he's one of those prolific players when he is on fire that can rack up a big score.
Yeah, I'll go slightly Roscommon as well. Right, the other game in Amore Park at 5 o'clock. This is fantastic, lads. It's a mile across the road for me. All these drives to Letterkenny and bloody Killarney and everything. Good luck. Across the road is all it is. So Cork Tyrone are in Amore Park. Cork obviously have done us a favour and have picked their team, so they've made 5 changes to the team that was very disappointing against Kerry. So Kiley, James Lockery, Brian O'Driscoll all come in, and the two Hurley brothers, they're on the full forward line alongside obviously Luke Connolly. So, like, I mean, they're the changes for Cork. I can't really see Cork winning this game, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, their manager, Ronan McCarthy, said, this is of Tyrone, "I'm expecting manic work rate, defensive solidity, but I don't think they get credit for their counter-attacking ability. They're probably no better side at really." Well, you don't listen to the podcast here, Ronan, anyways, if you think they don't get credit for their counter-attacking ability. "When they turn you over, the way they break in numbers and support each other up the pitch is a joy to behold at times when they move the ball quickly. They've real quality players, game changers, the likes of Tiernan McCann and Peter Hart, Matty Donnelly, they're all top players." So I'm glad for Cork's point of view that Ronan McCarthy pointed out, "I'm expecting manic work rate and defensive solidity," because, like, yeah, I mean, that's your starting point with, yeah, Tyrone. Yeah, yeah. Like, there are two things that you're going to have to match, yeah, when you hit Tyrone straight away. So whether Cork can match that, can be tactically aware enough to track those runners, like, not just kind of half-hearted do it. You have to sprint near the length of the field, tracking a man that might never get the ball. Yeah. Like, are you ready to go?
That's what they have to be prepared to do, and that's it. You have to ask yourself, you know, from a Cork point of view, the question, are Cork as good as Meath? Are Cork as good as Cavan? Because both Cavan and Meath run through them very, very close in the qualifiers this year. And if they believe that they are, and if the team going out across that line in Amore Park on Saturday believe that they are, then they can run through them close. You know, going back to Tyrone's record in the qualifiers, though, and that is something that, you know, has to stand by a team on occasions. But I still believe that Tyrone's a Super 8 team. You know, we would have been tipping them very heavily at the start of the year to get into the Super 8s, well ahead of Cork, and I don't think that's going to change this weekend.
Yeah, Colm O'Neill's out, unfortunately. He only came on against Kerry, and Peter Kelleher, who offers them an option of a high ball, like, he's a bigger kind of unit, he's out with an ankle injury. So I just can't see Aidan Walsh, interestingly, lads, has been dropped to the bench, yeah, and deservedly dropped to the bench. Like, I mean, his career has just taken a nosedive. Like, he's neither coming or going now. Mm-hmm. This is a fella, I think he could have two All-Stars. Like, he definitely has one in midfield, an All-Ireland winning midfielder, and now he's just like he just doesn't seem to get into games at all. I don't think he was ever that dominating midfielder. He was more of a supporting midfielder. Yeah. But, like, I mean, he was awful against Kerry, absolutely awful. Kerrigan's on the bench, wouldn't have him on the bench. Like, he actually showed a bit of spark when he came out against, yeah, Kerry. I don't know why he's on the bench. Maybe he's trying to turn over and move on with a new team. But you just can't see Cork beating Tyrone. I can see them being competitive, yeah, for the first half, but I can't see them over a full game being able to beat Tyrone.
Yeah, you talked about tracking the runs. That's not even the problem, I think. I think people can track their runs, but then it's mentally wanting to go at a team then and make a run yourself when you're worried about going back down the other end again for another 100 yeah metre race with somebody. So I think what happens gradually when Tyrone and Dublin are playing weaker teams is that teams sort of save themselves then, expecting they have to chase, yeah, after somebody, and then turnovers come easier, and I think that'll play out eventually, yeah, as this game goes on.
And but that's the thing, like, the tracking runners is obviously just a counter attack side, but then you have to have a whole plan of how to attack,
get
them
back up again, yeah.
And, like, Cork will not have had to work on that in Munster at all, because Tipperary and Kerry don't play that. They only were drawn on Monday morning. Can Cork work in 5 days in training on how to be patient, work on the outside of, yeah, Tyrone, don't bring the ball into contact, try and create overloads of two or three, yeah, players on two? I can't see how it can do that. Like, I can't see Cork being able to deal with their counterattack game, but I also can't see Cork making an impression on Tyrone's defensive game.
Maybe they were planning, though, because they had either Monaghan, Tyrone, Armagh or Kildare, or maybe they were expecting some sort of defensive,
well, true,
setup,
yeah,
but
yeah,
Yeah, I don't see how they could, even with the 2 weeks or whatever it was, how they could just suddenly change. And you're right about the midfielder. Like, if your head's not in it against Tyrone, like you're in a hiding to nothing. And I think that might have shown up a few places.
And I think the fact that the Munster final, it was a demoralising defeat in the end, and it's going to be hard psychologically for them to get over that defeat and know, oh God, we've got thrown in the face here now. So that there, you know, two tough games one after another is not easy.
Yeah, no, exactly. The two hurdlies have a good bit of fire in their bellies. They'll they're two good fellas to be picking against Tyrone. But we'll go predictions here in this. Let's Cork are 10-3, Tyrone 1-3. The handicap is 4. I'll start here. I'd be going with Tyrone maybe to beat that handicap.
Yeah,
so would I.
Me too.
Okay, we're all agreeing on that one. The next one up is Fermanagh and Kildare. This is at 7 o'clock on Sky Sports. We have a feast of GEA on Saturday, and the first game against Armagh Roscommon is going to be a great game. Second game is going to be a great game too, because Tyrone's counter attack game is going to work, and Tyrone look beautiful when they're playing that counter attack game. And Fermanagh Kildare, this isn't going to be probably a great game for the purists. If you're one of these hipsters that loves these kind of playing on the outside games, that's what you're going to get here. Because if Fermanagh have any brains, after seeing Kildare against Mayo and after seeing Kildare against Carlo, what will we do? We do love playing like Carlo. We really like that. It worked. Kildare has got some great players, like playing attacking football, but Kildare showed against Carlo that they weren't clued in tactically that day, or weren't ready to go down to the work rate levels that these counter-attack teams will go to. So like, I can see Fermanagh just going really defensive against Kildare.
Well, we know that's definitely going to be the case, and my concern for Kildare going into this game is they're going to be a lull after last week's heroics of beating Mayo. And you know, obviously they went into that game with a siege mentality, so you know, can the match, the work rate, the intensity and the effort that they put into that game for the second week in a row against a Fermanagh team that are certainly nowhere near as good as what Mayo are, but definitely will be set up more defensively, and how Kildare are going to break that down is going to be, you know, very, very important and interesting to see. But you know, that would be my concern for Kildare. Can they match the intensity? Because you can be sure of one thing with Fermanagh, even though they're set up for, defensively, they will get tore in to Kildare at every opportunity that they get. But Kildare are physically very strong. They are physically athletic as well, and they may be able to withstand that.
Like, we know Kildare are a great footballing team. Like, Kildare scored 117 against Dublin last year in the Leinster final. Like, I mean, I know they lost by 9, but to concede a 2-3 early, like, Kildare are Galway have made the step up from where Kildare were. Kildare haven't made that step up, but I think Kildare have the potential, maybe not to get to those top teams, but be able to beat one on a like, they've beat Mayo, so they have proved that they can beat one of those top teams. But are they married to this system, or can they be flexible like Leash, for example, and play two completely contrasting systems within two games? I think Kildare against Carlow, they showed them no respect and went out and played their own game. Against Fermanagh, they're just going to have to show Fermanagh that respect and realise that our game against that, we could get caught here.
Yeah, I agree, but I think it's an easier decision because Fermanagh have really struggled. Like, they're not even a counter-attacking team. They're defensive, but they're not scoring. They're not getting past teams. So I think Kildare look at that and think, all right, we'll just murder it. They only scored 1-8 against Monaghan. You know, very poor in the Ulster final. So if Kildare can just get enough bodies in front, not get caught on the break, then they'll be all right.
I think. Do Fermanagh not even break a pace? What? Like, it's hard to describe Fermanagh. They kind of hope for a bit like Carlo. They hope for freeze, They'll work the ball back up, very much
looking to gain freeze, and then they've got Quigley to put them over the bar. So if you've got a free taker of that ability, you know, it's an added plus. But the one thing as well, another thing, sorry, from Kildare's point of view, is they kicked some fantastic long range points last week against Mayo, and if they can replicate that there, then they certainly have a brilliant chance of winning this game, because Fermanagh will retreat and retreat you know, back towards the 21 yard line, and Kildare have players with the ability to kick obviously 40-50 yard points, so you know, they would be expecting to maybe do that 5 or 6 times over the course of this game.
They can, and they have a good free taker themselves. Neil Flynn just nonchalantly kind of chips the ball over the bar there. Like, I mean, it's a nice style. Now, he missed the pressure one late on, he pulled it, which you would have expected him to get, but long range scores maybe 5 yards outside the 45, he seems to be more than confident just to tap these over. Like, I mean, obviously Fermanagh are strong in midfield, but Kildare are also very strong in midfield, so if kickouts are going to the middle, which I'd say both will, definitely Kildare's kickouts are going to go to the middle, because Fermanagh are contesting kickouts, so Kildare have to use their brains And that's the only opportunity they'll have in one-on-one. So Feely versus Jones and these fellas out around the middle.
It's going to be a good battle around the middle. So it'll be in
this
game.
The only chance for Daniel Flynn, really, if they win the ball there and then they turn and get it.
I wouldn't be sure. I'd start with Daniel Flynn in full forward, but I'd be a lot quicker about moving him out of there than I was against Mayo.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he can inject, he can break those lines from deep. Like, maybe playing him full forward in this game is just a waste of such a speedy, dynamic player.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, with Andy Murnan in the Armagh game, they really gobbled him up by leaving him in there. So maybe a player who, as influential as Flynn, move him out the field, let him maybe dictate how his own performance, instead of, you know, leaving him in there to suffocate in the Fermanagh defence.
That's Flynn coming on at pace around that 45. Yeah. He's getting through that line.
He's getting through, very strong.
What Donegal exposed, and they have been doing for a while. Like that, yes, you have a lot of bodies back and it looks daunting, but there's so many boys there who are bollocks. Like, and if you go at them, they're going to let you pass. Like, there's a lot of boys there bluffing, just filling space, and it looks good. But there's some of them there, if you just push on the fence, then it'll open. Yeah. And someone like Flynn, like Ryan McHugh, like all these Donegal boys going at them, they'll get through if they go at the right person.
Yeah, no, definitely Donegal proved it. And even maybe the Kildare half back line, Flynn wing back, he injected a bit of pace into those moves against Mayo late on. And Senan Connell was saying that Keane O'Neill was shouting at him to keep doing that and keep doing that. So we'll get predictions on this, lad. So Fermanagh 5-2. A decent bet. Like, I mean, again, I said on Monday, I don't fully trust Kildare yet. I need to see a good professional win against Fermanagh to go right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't trust Kildare yet, like I said on Monday. So 5-2 in Fermanagh, I wouldn't be saying that's a ridiculous bet or anything. So the handicap is 3. So what are we going here, Stevie?
I think I go with the handicap.
Fermanagh plus 3.
Fermanagh plus 3, yeah. I think I'll go with that there. I think it's a good enough bet.
Okay. Right, but Kildare to win, but Fermanagh to get within 3.
Yeah.
Okay, Conan.
Yeah, I'll just do Kildare to win.
Okay, yeah. I'll do Kildare to win as well. But I'm not overly confident about it, because again, I
do expect that there will be a lull after last weekend. But I still believe that the county's on a high now after last weekend, and it'll be enough of a driving force behind them to get them over the line.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Right. So the only qualifier of the whole weekend that's not on television is Laois Monaghan, which is very disappointing because it's on a 2, and the hurling could have been put on a 4, and both of these games could have been on TV. But it's on at 2 o'clock and the hurling's on at 3, so it's the only qualifier that is not on any station. So I don't get that, unless they think Monaghan are just going to hammer Laois and people aren't going to be interested. But you might be surprised by this stat: Monaghan have never beaten Laois in the championship, lads.
How often have they played?
Once. in 2012 in the qualifiers, a similar stage, they went down to a Moor Park and Laois beat them. Like, Laois wouldn't be too concerned, probably fear wise of playing Monaghan, because it's a novelty. There's no history there. Like, I mean, so like Monaghan team has changed a little bit since the Tyrone game. Like, Vinnie Corey's gone. Kieran Hughes has been injured the last two games. He hasn't been there. Jack McCarron has been dropped down to the bench. Do you know what I mean? There are 3 players. Neil McAdam doesn't get on the team anymore. And when I think of Monaghan, I'm thinking of these players. So, like, I mean, I don't think there's anything.
Neil McAdam was never really a consistent starter anyway. Was he not?
I always thought he was solid, though. Yeah, I thought he was solid.
I think McCarron hasn't been great, to be honest, over the McCarron, last year's championship, right through, like, the league this year, the championship this year.
He hasn't. He's been on a long stretch of bad form. And the problem, I think, is that Conor McCarthy's come in now and he's on that 2-man full forward line and he's full of life and he's showing.
Yeah.
McCarron doesn't have that pace. He's a finisher.
Exactly,
and if you play McCarron, do you know what he reminds me a bit of the Gooch, like the Gooch as his career was nearly ending. Corner forward didn't have the pace for it, and half forward line had to do too much. The modern game, he had to chase. And McCarron's similar in that he's a stylish, good player. But like, if you play him in the half forward line, he might not track his man. And if you play him in the full forward line, has he got the pace to make those runs? Because McManus's movement isn't great. We know that. He needs a foil of either a big man or someone who's going to buzz around and do that running for him and get that second phase ball into McManus, then, you know? So, like, I mean, he's not on it. So, like, I mean, it is a bit of a new look team. Drew Wiley hasn't been on it. Now, he's had a niggly injury, so he didn't play the last day. I'd imagine he'll come back in centre back the next day. But I don't know. I can see Laois making this pretty competitive. I do think they have Drew Wiley, who'll have that strength to pick up Donny Kingston, who is Leash's talisman and most important player. And Wiley generally doesn't, although Conair Harrison has showed up Wiley that he's not invincible. We thought he was invincible there for a few years. I don't know. The handicap here is 6. I don't see Laois being hammered or on a higher level to Waterford and Leitrim, much higher level in fact, and I think Laois can make a real good game of this.
They can. And how fortunate have Monaghan been in the qualifiers in terms of the draw? You know, I think it's all Division 4 teams they've played against
this year so far. Yeah. And would you believe, lads, that last year who they played? They played Division 4 teams last year as well. They went down to Wexford, hammered them. Who was
Carlo?
They
played Carlo,
another Division 4, and then beat Down, who I think Down could have come up from Division 3. So, like, Monaghan have been steeped for the last 2 years getting back.
Really, really lucky. So, you know, they'll never get a greater opportunity to get to this stage of the championship. You know, although looking at and going into this game, I'm looking at the odds here. Laois 5-1. Laois aren't a Division 4 team anyway. They're no longer a Division 4 team, as we know. But for me, they aren't a Division 4 team, and I think they'll pose a stiffer challenge to Monaghan this weekend than what any team would. And they have players capable of scoring as well. So, you know, while I think ultimately Monaghan have enough good quality and players capable of seeing the game out, it will be a tougher game than what people expect it to be.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, we know Laois are tactically smart. We know Sugru's tactically smart. So it's not like, I don't think Monaghan are a massive counter-attacking game team either. Not in the Tyrone mold. Do you know what I mean? They're just a solid, good team, Monaghan, aren't they? Like, and Monaghan, again, they have that honesty of effort that a lot of teams don't have. But Laois have that this year. So, like, I mean, for a few of those reasons, they'll know exactly what to expect. Laois will. You know, and like, it could be a battle of the two goalkeepers here.
Brody against Egan. I'm looking forward to that. That's definitely should be on TV just for that.
Just for those just two, for who like to come out. But Garrett Dillon will pick up McManus. I'd say there's no doubt about that. He's been doing so well this year. Like, I mean, Laois will probably pair off. Carlo Connell, interestingly enough, has been picked wing forward the last couple of games. Like, I mean, I know it's so fluid in that middle third, and him playing wing back, there's not too much difference anyway. But you have to tag Carlo Connell because he is the one player that injects pace for Monaghan. Like, I mean, he's got a great
ability to get scores, particularly goals as well. So, but that's coming from deeper. So will wing half forward suit him, you know?
That's the thing. He'll have another
being marked as well, you know.
A lot of people do make that point, right? And trust me, who's played wing back and wing forward, there is a big difference.
Absolutely.
Often, depending on, if you're playing wing back and you go forward, you're marking a forward who's lazy and you can really run this lad into the ground. He's not in his instinct. You're playing wing forward, you're around the same area, but you've a lad glued to you.
You're being man marked, and that's totally different. And can he escape the shackles? He's definitely a strong player. He's an athletic player, but he's going to have somebody hanging off him, and that makes a big difference.
It's arguably a mistake moving him up there, really, when he's so effective as a wing back, because it took me maybe 2 seasons to actually, like, I remember when I moved from wing back to wing forward, I was like, how do I play this role? Because, like, I mean, Mikko wouldn't exactly give you advice. Like, I mean, he would be old school. He'd tell you, give it and go, and you know, these kind of generic kind of ones. So, like, I mean, I was looking at Brian Duer, and I was like, watching him in Croke Park going, geez, could I do that? And I was like, I don't think I could do it. I wouldn't really enjoy a game doing the amount of work. But Brian Duer just basically ran his man into the ground, where his man had to surrender to this natural running ability. And obviously Brian Duer was class then as well. Then I'd be looking at Paul Galvin around that time, and can I get in on breaks like he can? I was shit at getting in on breaks. So it took me a while to actually go, what is my role, what am I meant to be doing on this team? So I just ended up holding the half forward line all the time, and actually just running left and right on the half forward line. So when I got it, I was always that link lad if some lads came into midfield, and I could take on my man, I'd have space to run into, or I'd give it in. So, like, I mean, and then obviously the game changed a little bit and wing forwards were workers. Then I was put into the full forward line. I only got 1 year wing forward after finally figuring it out. I was like, this is bullshit. So me and Ross, after being the two wing forwards for like a couple of years, suddenly found ourselves the two corner forwards, and our best positions were wing forward. But anyways, like, I'm kind of venting here about my
America and was on the bench, couldn't get on the bench.
That was actually before.
But the difference, like nowadays, if you're a wing forward, like, the difference in the running, you have, like, when you're starting your run, you're actually going back, tracking a run, and then you're running again. So it's almost double the run. If you're a wing back, you decide when to go, you're fresh, you can just burst.
You decide going forward, but you can decide forward. You could be running around after a fella for a good while before.
Yeah,
maybe in the modern game, if they're dropping off, it's easier. Like, I haven't really experienced wing back in the modern game, which is basically a free roll as well.
Yeah, it is, but I still believe the top class wing half backs in the country, you know, decide when they go, and they go at the right time, and they make it count. And Carlo Connell is one of those players who, when he goes, he makes it count. Lee Keegan is another one of those players, when he goes, he makes it count. You know, you go back, Tomás O'Shea was another player, you know, they decide ultimately when they go. Philly Jordan was another player, you know, when to go, to really commit the going full-heartedly at their opponent's defence, and to get it on the end of the ball and put the ball in the back of the net or over the bar, and that's it.
No, that's exactly it. And that's it. So, like, I mean, there's not much more to say about this one. We'll get predictions here. I do think Laois won't fall into the Monaghan defensive trap. They've played Carlow 3 times this year, so they know all about that, and Monaghan won't be as extreme as Carlow. So I don't think Laois are 5-1 in this one. I fancy Monaghan to win the game. The handicap of -6, I'm not too sure. I'd go Laois plus. I'd add 6 to Laois's score, and I think he could be onto a winner.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well.
I like John Sugru. Like, I think the way they set up against Carlow, Wexford, Dublin, even, like, they obviously try to attack teams' weaknesses, which is a big thing for a manager to do.
Yeah, and it seems so logical, but so rare.
You know, when a manager talks afterwards as well, you know he's got a bit about him, like, just sounds like you would listen to him in the changing room. Like.
Would you believe I spoke with Brendan Quigley yesterday, and he said that exact same thing. Yeah. He said the respect he has in the squad, he says when he speaks, everyone is like a mouse.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And you get that from him even in post-match interviews, but I still think Monaghan will win. The handicap, it might be harsh on Laois, but it probably is just reflecting a Division 1 team and Division 4. Yeah. So
it won't, to be honest, like, if obviously they're not far off in the handicaps, it will be in and around that. As a Laois man, I'd like to believe Laois can get in closer to that, but it's hard to know. So you're going Monaghan wins, and I'm not sure. I think Laois will beat the handicap here.
I think Laois will beat the handicap as well. Yep.
Conan,
I want nothing to do with that.
I remember you got burned here before. Yeah. Right, lads, that's great stuff from you. But now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Joe Mooney in the studio, and Joe's from Paddy Power, and he's going to bring us a few specials this weekend. How's it going, Joe?
Good, thanks, Colin. Thanks for having me on.
Come here. It's your first show to be on. So we discuss this on the show, and we marvel at this on the show all the time. How the hell do you get the handicap so close?
Well, now, I can't be giving away trade secrets, Colin, obviously, but we've got the Boffins there, the GAA Boffins down on the second floor. We're trading. So, I mean, they'll be looking at everything from results over the year so far, how much teams are scoring on average, who they're playing against, what systems they're playing. And then there's obviously an element of what money's coming in as well, which can determine the market somewhat. But it's there's a number of different things coming into it. But there's a serious element of just GAA knowledge in there. There's a wealth of experience down on the trading floor, so they just have to take, as John Shaw would say, each game in its merits and go from there.
So it's a combination of a bit of knowledge, a bit of maths, a bit of stats. Do you ask your ambassadors their opinions, or do they get involved, or no? That's a bit above their station.
Well, they're not short of opinions, the lads, the ambassadors, but no, we tend to keep it with the guys who are good with the numbers.
Right, okay. Well, in fairness, on the Dublin handicap, however the hell you do it, because it's always 16 to 20, it's always like within a point or two. But I want to start off here because you've got a money back special on the football here. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the live TV games this weekend are Tyrone, Cork and Killarney and Fermanagh, obviously. So in the live TV games, you get a free bet on your losing first goal scorer bet if he scores any time in the match. Obviously, if you win the first bet, then fire away. But funnily enough, this weekend, with both games being Tyrone, Cork and Killarney and Fermanagh, there's at least one very defensive team about those games. So the no goal scorer bet might be the one to go for in these two games, ironically enough. And in Tyrone Cork, no goal score, we have them at 13-2, and Kildare Fermanagh is 11-2 for no goal.
Right, so no goal for either team.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a bit, and like, that's a money back. That's
so if your bet doesn't win but he scores a goal any time in the match, you get your money back you get your free bet back.
Okay, very good. Another interesting one here is Colm O'Rourke has a special bet, and I didn't associate Colm O'Rourke with Paddy Power at all, but he is apparently.
Colm O'Rourke flies under the radar a bit, but yeah, we've had a relationship with Colm for a while, and he gives us tips up a few bets now and again, and he's got his weekend certs. We've given him a bit of a boost, so surprise surprise, he's going for all the favourites. But basically, that's Monaghan, Tyrone, Kildare and Roscommon all to win, was 5-2. We've pushed it out to 3-1.
Okay, special for him, and he agrees with all of our tips here as well. We all went for those four favourites as well.
Yeah.
A little bit concerned about Armagh Roscommon outside of that, and Fermanagh could potentially, but at the same time,
we'll likely get one wrong. That's normally the way it goes. But sure,
that's why you're sucking people into this 3-1 here, right? Okay, thanks very much, Joe.
Right, cheers,
and
home.
We will be back on Monday with our usual review show. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Cheers.